another sunny day here in California in what month is this? October. And another exciting episode of Guitar Talk with John and Jamie. This is John.
This is Jamie.
Oh, that was the best one. That was, yeah. What happened?
I got some sleep last night.
You got some sleep?
Yeah.
Wow, because I don't think you've ever actually done that.
I know. Enthusiasm.
There was an enthusiastic moment. Yeah. That's awesome. And today, I'm pretty excited. We are here with our friend Travis Carlton, bass player extraordinaire and human being of wonderful kindness, joining us today to talk about all things guitar. How you doing, Travis?
I'm great, man. How you doing, John?
We're good. I think today, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot, and it came up for me at the panel we did at the Amp Show the other day, was why is what we do important? So I guess I'd like to start things up just kind of checking in with you and going, what's really like, aside, let's forget money for a second, because yeah. we know that's always the dough, chicks and beer.
We don't get any of that anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, money.
Yeah. So. Exactly. So what when you think about playing and you're going out, because you're working with a lot of great players, what's really important to you about playing?
Man, I think first for me, it's just my happiness. I mean, I feel like I was one of those people that I didn't really get much, you know, like God, if you believe in God or whatever your stance is, but, you know, you get gifts, whatever, from, you know, just who you are. And for me, like, playing music was kind of my only thing. Other than that, I'd be working in a factory, and I know I like playing bass a lot more than that.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, definitely, for me, it's almost, it's important because it keeps me sane, I guess.
You know? When did you start playing?
Well, I started on guitar when I was about 10.
Okay.
You didn't have one or two guitars lying around the house?
I do right now. I have a couple friends here, but I actually don't own one.
Yeah. How long did it take for you to like just transition over from guitar and like, okay, this is cool, but man, I really think I want to play bass?
Well, man, we always had a bass around the house from at least the time I was, you know, 12 or something. Yeah. So I always messed with it and could play it a little bit. But of course, I thought the guitar was way cooler, as everybody does. You want to be the dude taking the ripping solos and all that. So, I mean, for me, I guess it was when I was about 14, like a freshman year in high school. And of course, a friend's band needed a bass player. And yeah. I said I'd fill in for a while, like, you know, like everybody does. But man, and the band was not good. let's start with that. It wasn't like some killing guys or something. But you know, it turned into a thing where I've been playing guitar in bands and whatnot. And on bass, I just really felt creative. Like yeah. I really felt like yeah. I came into my voice, kind of. Like
yeah.
It was, I don't know, just a feeling I never felt on guitar. I was playing, when I played guitar, it was a lot more licks. I was going like right for the Hendrix shit that I would learn
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
and all that. But on bass, I actually felt creative, like,
yeah.
you know, for the first time, I guess.
Right.
So to me, that meant I should be playing bass.
Sure. Yeah. One of the first times I think I first met you, you know, on a Monday at the Baked Potato.
Yeah.
You know, one of the Monday nights there, you would come in. And I think that's where I first met you. And then I heard you play and I was like, wow, okay. You know, but it was one of those things where every time after that, it just seems like you got better and better and better. Every time I heard you, like, you blew my mind even more than the last time.
Oh, man.
Up to and including just recently, I saw you play with Kirk Fletcher.
Uh huh.
And I was like, I was just speechless.
Oh, dude.
And how great you sounded.
Thanks,
you just
Jamie.
Sound so great. And you're getting to play with some really great players, Kirk and Scott Henderson, one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously there's a difference stylistically, but as a bass player and as someone who, because you're also playing with a different drummer, so the nucleus of the rhythm section is different from band to band as well. But in terms of like, of the way that you have to play and approach the instrument, how does that differ from like guitarist to guitarist?
Yeah, well, that's a great question.
No, it definitely is, because it definitely changes a lot. You know, I can say like in my dad's band, it's
your dad, by the way, is
Larry Carlton. Sorry, I just really
never heard of
touched
him.
On that.
Wait, is he a guitar player?
Yeah. But in my dad's band, you know, like his approach, everything's real subtle. Everything's got to be quiet. Like the dynamics should go from a whisper to a scream. You know, a lot of people don't utilize that. So, I mean, I know in my dad's band, it's a lot of being really subtle. Everything is about the subtleties and, and, you know, how quiet can we get and still make it feel great, and how, like, you know, those kind of things. Where Scott, it's, we use dynamics still, but it's much more of a stagnant thing. It's more of like
sudden changes. Like, I mean, cause when I listen to the arrangers, it's like sudden changes in dynamics to accentuate parts of the song.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. That kind of stuff. And it's like a simmer the whole time.
Right.
It's like you want to go from simmer to boil over.
Yeah.
In my dad's band, we're going from cold water to boil.
Yeah. You know? Right. Yeah.
And then same thing playing with Robin Ford a lot, man. I mean, it's kind of somewhere in between the two.
Okay.
We're like, you know, it's like a rock band.
Yeah.
Kind of. I mean, at least the era when I was playing with them, it really felt like a rock band where there was some tunes where we got to take lots of liberties, you know?
Yeah.
And it could really, I mean, some nights on the tunes that we really got to improvise like that, some nights it would just kind of be the song and be a nice, like, solo that happened in the middle.
Sure.
And other nights we'd go, like, way left field and let it completely fall apart and turn into, like, a 70s Miles thing.
This is nice with Robin.
Yeah, with Robin. So, I mean, there's a lot of openness, you know? Scott's book definitely has more arrangements than that. So sometimes you can't get as free. You're free within the arrangement.
Sure.
But and my dad's book too. But there's always, I mean, everybody always has those moments where we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
But,
who would you think you have the most freedom with when you're playing?
Well, definitely Scott is down to let me do whatever I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think with his music, maybe I have the most freedom to kind of try new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just because Scott's fearless, you know, like Scott's so down to just make it as burning as it can be every night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but there's, like I said, there's, it's different with everybody because definitely, like I said, Scott's book is more arranged. So there's ultimately less freedom within the song because of that. Cause we can't completely change the way it feels or this section's not going to work,
you know?
Where with Dad, I feel like I'm more free harmonically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we can, we really get into messing with the harmony, especially when we were playing trio where it's just me and him. So like, you know, if we're playing a blues or anything like that, I mean, the changes will be different every chorus.
Yeah.
And it's just us chasing each other around, you know, listening to what the other person's playing and where we think or, you know, hopefully sometimes know it's going to go.
See, this is great. This is actually, this is something Jamie and I have been talking about, which is something I've been, a thread I've been sort of following for a while, which kind of goes with the idea of why is what we're doing important to us?
Yeah.
Because the idea for me that's come up is that I'm starting to see more and more, I'm 51 and I've been playing now most of my life. And I'm seeing this as a long conversation. Like we're talking in another language and we're having all of these conversations. And it's like really this idea, this interesting idea that you and your dad are playing music together, but you're having this conversation that kind of meanders.
Oh yeah.
Like what we're doing right now, actually. And there's something engaging about music where the conversation meanders. And I think in a lot of ways, this is why I'm not really that big on pop music these days, because the conversation is so structured and directed towards making money.
Yeah.
That the idea of making music and creating a conversation that's interesting is getting kind of left behind. Where do you think the conversation, like when you're meandering with your dad, where does it get really interesting for you or with anyone?
Well, yeah, I mean, just on those special nights, who knows where inspiration comes from, you know? Sometimes it can be because we're so jet-lagged and tired that we're not thinking. Sometimes it can be we're so well-rested that we're thinking great, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you never know where that comes from. But I know a lot of it is just trying to be available, trying to keep your ears open and being really available to let it happen tonight the way it wants to happen tonight.
That's what I like about music. When I started playing, Jamie, that's just, we've talked about this, is when I started playing, the people who I was admiring, Mahavishnu Orchestra, Jimi Hendrix, 10 years after, they were letting it happen. These these guys were, you know, Johnny Winter and Mike Bloomfield, these guys were these musicians who, where it was really important to let it happen. And I think there's been this, not evolution, but actually de-evolution, where it's less and less letting it happen and more.
Well, I trip out on the whole thought, I mean, just to emphasize on that a little bit, that anytime someone's improvising, that it's jazz now. Like that, you know, I mean, to a layman, like, you know, if if there's extended guitar solos because you like Fish or whatever, it's now jazz.
Yeah.
You know?
But Fish is a jam band where it's supposed to be.
Exactly. But even the word jam band, I mean, was Jimi Hendrix a jam band or was it, was Led Zeppelin?
Exactly.
Of course, was Led Zeppelin a jam band? Yeah. Meaning like they had songs and they did that, but they were available.
They're, you know, I mean, in concert. They would do like a 30-minute version of Dazed and Confused. Or
exactly.
It's like, were they the original jam band?
Well, that was the point of it then. Yeah. That was the point, they didn't have, first of all, there was no VH1, no MTV, no YouTube, no, you know, instant access. And what it was when I was a kid, was you'd buy a record and you'd listen to the songs, you'd be happy and excited and know the songs, you'd know the lyrics or whatever. But the whole thing was to go out and see these guys and what would happen when they performed the songs. Genesis, I remember having my mind blown. Yeah. Not Genesis, like MTV Genesis, but
yeah, Peter Gabriel
Genesis. Yeah. Like where I went to see those guys and I saw Lamb Lies Down on Broadway and I think I was like 15. Mm-hmm. And my brain was just completely blown away by the theatricality and the music. Or yes, by today's standards would be a jam band, but they were like Zappa. Yeah. They were like this intricate...
Yeah, they were definitely operating. Genesis had far less of an improvisational side to them than, say, Yes, because Yes was, again, they were, you know, they had the songs, but then they were just these jumping off points for getting into these explorations, and then they'd come back to them. And,
but that was the era, wasn't it?
Yeah.
ELP, and what was the Holdsworth band, the first one?
He was in Soft Machine.
Soft Machine.
And Gong.
Soft Machine. And those were all, like, super technical, but still... Yeah, leaping out.
Yeah,
what leaps out to you now when you're listening?
Man, well, it depends. I mean, like just a couple months ago, I got really into this band called Dirty Projectors from Brooklyn. You guys ever heard of these guys? I can't think of the guy's name. And again, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of on some hipster rock from Brooklyn, and you know, for me, what really struck me to it is interesting songs. Like, it's really rooted in old rock, kind of Zeppelin-y, but like Zeppelin 3 is a lot of acoustic that kind of stuff, but really interesting harmonies and vocally. So there's like the guy, I wish I could remember his name, who writes all the music and is the lead singer most of the time, who also plays guitar. But then there's two or three, it changes sometimes, girls in the band, and they really utilize their voices as an instrument, like in a way that I've kind of never heard.
We'll have to look.
Like,
if anyone who's listening knows what the gentleman's name is, please let us know so we can post it later.
Yeah, definitely. And and he's a great guitar player too. Not on, like, you're not gonna freak out on his solos. He's no Jamie Kyle. meaning like it, all the little parts that he's written are just unbelievable. And
I love that he can
play it and sing it at the same time.
That's cool.
Mind blowing to me. You know, it's a cool band, Dirty Projectors.
It's funny, we were talking about Dirty Loops earlier.
Yeah.
So now we got Dirty Loops and Dirty Projectors. What would be next? Dirty
Sanchez.
Dirty
Sanchez.
I don't want to know what that is.
Yeah.
Please don't tell me. Okay. Just don't
want to
know.
Yeah. I know in the last year or two, a lot of Gretchen Parlato, if you guys know who that is, she's a jazz singer.
Yeah, I know her.
Again, for me, it's more about like the subtleties. That first record, all the little duets of her and Lionel Lukey are just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, and I find that maybe as I'm getting older, it's less about like the burning improvisation that happens and more just, you know, the overall feel.
Right.
If something can just grab me and like hold on to me for a minute, you know.
Right.
I like the grabbing effect.
Yeah.
We did a thing with Mitch the other day when Mitch Foreman was on the show.
Yep.
And we said, you know, because actually he's played with some of the same players you are, but we said, think of a player. And then, you know, what was one word, one sentence?
Well, one sentence, but, you know, it turns into a
whatever. Yeah, whatever. But think of something, like, if you want to start, your dad, one sentence.
Oh, shoot. Let me think about this. I got to pick my words.
Well, I'm thinking how you want to go to someone else.
No. My dad, I guess it would be, as good a guy as he is a guitar player.
That's
like, no, I mean, you know, I really have to like emphasize that I mean, my dad, again, that can be my phrase, as good a guy as he is a guitar player.
Yeah.
But, you know, he really tries to put that out into the world. Mm. And, you know, I think maybe at some points in his youth, he might've been a little cockier and all that, but, you know, he's definitely like a really humble, you know, he's glad and thankful that his life has been what it is. Yeah. He doesn't feel like it happened to him because he's special or something. He feels like he got lucky.
Right. I was inspired to that on my tombstone. I remember at Ted Green's memorial, that was basically what I walked away with, is a guy that not only was an extraordinary teacher and musician, but everyone there saying, and is fine a human being.
Yeah, because they're not always mutually exclusive, as we know,
yes,
being in this business. But your dad's... just as a side note, those first two solo albums he put out, the first album, when that came out, that like blew the doors off of my world that I was living in at the time. I was taking lessons from a great teacher, and I was really into it. And I was starting to get into other types of music outside of like blues, bass, rock, and Zeppelin and stuff like that. And then I heard that album. I went out and got it right when it came out. And it was... I was like, wait a minute. So you mean to tell me that it can be like a rock groove, but you know, there can be other chords and things. There can be these, you know, yeah, these almost kind of, you know, and at the time it's like, it's kind of jazz because, you know, there's like chords that are, there are seventh chords and there's more than just, you know, one little, you know,
minor seven, sharp fives.
And there's different chords and he's playing. Man, I mined that first album. I can't tell you how many licks I stole that I still will play to this day. And then Strike Twice came out, and it was kind of the same, the continuation. It was like even more stuff for me to steal.
Well, you know that was never planned for him to become an artist and those records to happen. It all just kind of happened that way.
Yeah.
He had quit doing sessions, was trying to produce more and arrange more in the pop world, you know? And so because of that, he was playing Dante's at first and then the Baked Potato once a week.
Yeah.
And after a couple years of that, I don't remember who it was that was like, man, you should make a record. Document this. Obviously, people are liking it. They're coming out, you know.
Back in the days when people came out and you could just take a guy that came from the world of playing sessions and being just sort of behind the scenes that was really not known outside of, you know, the local circle, and then you just put out a record and
it worked.
Yeah, because people can't care about music.
There was a different
level of caring because access was different. There was no MTV, there's no YouTube. And music was something that people looked forward to.
Yeah, if you were into music, you had to go, you would want to go hear it live. You know, you could hear it on the radio, the same stuff you could buy or at home, but definitely without it, you know, I mean, I bet you we could turn on the TV right now and find a concert on cable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I think the thing he had working for him, too, as well, is that he had just, and this might be something that he carried forward from doing so many sessions and playing on so many records with singers and pop-oriented things, is that he had a real pop sensibility to his instrumental music. And that's something that he carried forward even into more of the acoustic
stuff. Oh, yeah. You know, he, and I do know that he's always conscious of that. And especially, I mean, anything that I've ever brought him, he says, that's great. What radio station would they play it on?
Yeah.
Right.
And no, that's not like always the best way to look at art.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at your business, if there's a middle ground that it can find, you know, I know that right when I don't know if it was a year before or whatever, but when the first Larry Carlton album was going to get made with Room 335 and all that. And he actually had a phone meeting with, what's his name? That's so stupid. I hope you can edit me here. dude, what's the guy's name? The big Clive Davis. And he was telling Clive about his ideas, and I'm pretty sure he had a demo or two of some stuff that Clive had listened to. And that's what Clive asked Dad. He said, well, you know, I know you're a great player. I'm familiar with your work and all this, but, you know, where, who do you see buying your record? How are they going to know that this is out? What radio station is going to play it? And he didn't know or anything.
Yeah.
And I know Dad also accredits a lot of it just being timing.
Sure.
That he did that at the time and right as that adult contemporary market was becoming a thing, you know, so he could slide in there in between some singers playing Sleepwalk or something that would turn people on to him and maybe instrumental music that otherwise wouldn't have. You
know? Yeah.
Okay, so Robin Ford.
I can go typical and say Blues Beyond. And not because I watched the video, but just, I don't know, when I think Robin, I just think about his playing, I guess, is the first thing that pops in my head. I was such a fan growing up of Robin. To get to play with him was really cool because both my dad and my mom listened to Robin's records growing up. So I grew up with that around. So, yeah, I guess my sentence would just be Blues Beyond.
Yeah, that's got to be a little bit of an interesting thing, almost surreal, I would imagine. You know, because of who your dad is, but I know Robin and your dad were contemporaries. You know, they were. Robin got a special mention on your dad's first album. You know, so I know that they were friends. So that's got to be a little strange. You know, like, oh, now I'm playing with this guy that I've known all my life, basically. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, they were into it, and you know, it started with Dad and Robin did the record together.
Yeah,
and it was me and Toss and Panos and Jeff Babko did the record in Tokyo. And then shortly after that, you know, they kept touring, but just as a quartet, just with me and Toss. And so when Robin started, you know, booking his own gigs again, he was just really digging the rhythm section. So I just got to kind of slide in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was kind of gradual, but definitely, you know, there were some schedule conflicts sometimes that, you know, brought up interesting conversations, I can say.
I'm going to throw one more name at you, and then we're going to let you go so you can get food for Keith and Herbie.
Keith and Herbie, the cats of wonderness.
Yeah, are very hungry. And is this Keith right there?
Yeah, that's Keith.
Keith has been pacing the entire show.
Keith started chewing on my hand, so I think he's really hungry. I'm going to throw Kirk Fletcher.
Oh, man. Kurt. My brother and best friend.
All right.
That's Kurt.
There you have it.
And, you know, maybe aside from my family, it's hard to say, but probably my favorite guitar player ever.
Yeah.
Like, I heard Kirk. I was actually, we met through Alexander Dumble, but not really. Because, you know, Dumble's his own character.
Yeah.
But he had come to one of Dad's gigs. And after hearing me, it was might have been the first time he heard me. He was like, man, you got to meet Kirk Fletcher. Like, you guys got to play together. Like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
And he told me to go to Cafe Boogaloo, where I played a lot in Hermosa Beach. And Kirk did on this Thursday night, man, you got to go hear Kirk Fletcher. Cool. So I showed up on Thursday night. No Kirk Fletcher. It was some like rockabilly band. Kirk was playing like the next night or something.
Yeah.
Man, oh shoot. And then I ended up meeting Kirk at a Landau gig at the Baked Potato, you know, and it's a trip because definitely we were fast friends. You know, one of those people that you feel like sometimes fate just puts you with some people, you know, that you're supposed to be with. I think Kirk and me are kind of joined at the hip.
Yeah.
Like,
great guy.
Yeah, he's the best.
You guys definitely have a synergy when you play together. And you know, we didn't really get into talking about, you know, any, because I kind of wanted to touch on drummers, but we sort of didn't do that. But really the focus of what today was anyways, just talk about how you, your interaction specifically with guitarists, because that is the name of the show.
Yes.
Guitar Talk.
Although,
and not
guitars,
rhythm
we would love to have you. We would love to have you on the show again.
Oh, yeah.
And we will talk about anything you want. we're really grateful that you're here on Guitar Talk with us. And we'll look forward to having you here again. Anything you want to, any shout out that you feeling?
Shout out to Kirky.
were you playing in it? Were you upcoming? Any tours, anything going on?
Man, I'm actually home for the first time in a long time. I'm home till at least Christmas. I have a couple spot dates this month with Mike Landau in the Bay, and that's it.
Is there any place people can go and find out about what you're doing?
Facebook will probably be the best, but I'm bad about posting.
I'll work on that. Be on the lookout for Travis Carlton. He'll blow your mind. One of the greatest bass players out there today.
And we're really grateful you're here. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having me.
All right,
so generally what we do at this point is we just sort of talk and make really not a lot of sense because the music's playing out.
Yeah.
So we can kind of talk shit.
So thanks for going on.
Yeah.
So you could use it to blackmail.
Yeah, exactly. I think